Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, welcome to the Autocar Podcast, My Week in Cars, with Pryor here, Cropley over there. Good morning, Stephen.
Morning, mate. How are you?
Very well, thank you, mate. You can write to us, autocar@haymarket.com, as Oliver Thompson has done, to say, I wondered if either of you had yet had a go in the Microlino. Who knows? It's a Swiss company. They make an electric quadricycle, which Oliver says, in theory, looks like it could be everything that the Citroën AMI promised but didn't deliver on. It might be perfect for its city purpose in size and drivability. Charming, well-packaged. It looks like the old BMW Isetta type thing with a big swinging opening door at the front, but is electric.
Always loved them.
It's an idea. It does look cool, doesn't it? It does look quite a good thing. In short, neither of us has tried it yet, Oliver. But
keen to have a go, though.
Yeah, keen to have a go. There was, the last I heard, it was due to come to the UK on. There were plans for a UK on sale.
I think I saw a story in the FT magazine.
Yeah, early this year, something like that. But as yet, hasn't arrived. But if we'll go and we'll go out there if one doesn't come here.
Slightly terrifying price, if I remember.
Oh yeah, you could. Yes, I think you're right. I think you can spend quite a lot on one. You know, the amount of money that would get you a real car,
yeah,
so to speak. But interesting.
Were you not saying that whereas with the Isetta, the steering wheel and the pedals swing out as you open the front door?
Here they do not.
They do not.
So to get in, I think you have to sort of fall back into the driver's, well, into the passenger seat, and then scooch across to the driver's seat. But yes, two seats side by side. What did we say in our story? Enough room for two people and three crates of beer, I think they called it, which is not very, I don't know, fine, but which is, you know, as much as you'd want. Two adults and three beer crates, weighs 513 kilograms and is capable of 90 kilometres per hour, which is 56, something like that.
Yeah,
90 is
about
40,
hang on,
it's 55. 80 is
50,
isn't it? Yeah. Preliminary prices were set to start at about €15,000, I think. So it's
not terrible.
No, but still, not the cheapest thing in the world. But yeah, from what I read, Oliver, interesting car, and yes, somewhat more capable than an AMI, which is just not quite.
Not quick enough and doesn't ride well enough.
29 mile an hour top speed is not enough for most people, is it really?
No.
Anyway, you are thinking about a vehicle, which is...
The
saga continues, Steve. So, how to put this? It's more usable than a Citroën AMI, we think. But we were at Bicester's Sunday Scramble, first of the year last week. You and I both saw this car, and I moved on, and you pick up the tail.
Well, the thing is, I don't think either of us realised the significance of this car, and it turned out to be a amazingly unmolested 1973 two-door Range Rover, which had lived 45 years of its life in South Africa, and therefore not suffered the usual European ravages, you know, no salt and all that. And it's now for sale at Jaguar Land Rover Classic, where they, you know, make the replica D-types and the XKSSs and all that.
That's the official bit of JLR, is it? Yeah. That's an official part of the company.
And the thing that's so interesting about this car is that it was bought to turn into a brand new one, in effect.
Hmm.
And an excellent bloke called Mike Bishop, who's the world's expert in Land Rovers, works there. He saw this car and he thought, hang on a minute, why would you want to dismantle this car? It's perfect anyway, and it's got the virtue of genuine history and all the rest of it.
Mm.
So it's for sale. I saw it, read the blurb, talked to Mike, and I'm going to go and look at it this very afternoon.
So it's a sort of olivey green type thing with a... What's inside? I didn't look closely inside.
It's got the so-called Kit Kat seats, very early seats with these sort of... beige plastic with channels set into the seats. They only lasted for a couple of years before they changed it because the plastic was affected by UV, I think. And one of the reasons that you can tell this car's been fairly well looked after, or very well looked after, is that the plastics are still all right.
Oh, I see. So it would not have been exposed to too much sunlight.
No, it seems to have been used normally. I mean, it's got, you know, some scars on the body and things. No dents, but signs of use. But and it's done I think it's 124,000 Ks, which is to say 80-ish thousand miles, 70-something thousand miles. But they say it's healthy and, you know, can't believe the condition. And so we're going to go for a squirt this afternoon, see what we think.
And it's too nice for them to restore.
Well, Mike, they were going to tear it apart. And he said, stay your hand, you know, don't be silly. So, and it's for sale at 50-ish. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously if they rebuilt it, it would be 150-ish.
Yes, yeah.
But I'm interested. And the thing is, as you know, this is a shocking saga of mine. But I've got a few quid and I have just had a big birthday and I thought I'm going to buy myself a present of some kind, but I want to be excited by it. And this has got me into a bit of a state. So that's one good thing.
It's the excitement is what you need, isn't it? You have a few cars that would do most of what you would need.
Yeah.
And then the gap that could be filled does need to be something, one, you're excited about, two, that you'll want to use.
Yeah,
I suppose.
Take
and
places.
That's the thing. You could, presumably, I mean, I haven't driven an original stock original Range Rover, but I have driven some, you know, Kingsley Automotive based sort of just the other side of Oxford who restore, sort of do resto mods on early Range Rovers. But they still drive pretty, you know, relatively authentically. You know, they'll upgrade the interior a bit and the brakes a bit and can give it more power. But they drive largely, as you would remember, as I understand.
Yeah.
They're pleasant to spend time in, aren't they? They're not a chore to drive distance
or
anything else.
Well, Mike says that this car is... you would be able to, if you were willing, if you were happy to take, you know, perhaps... take a bit of a risk with it, it would still do off-roading. I don't know whether I would, but I think I would. I mean, you certainly drive it across a few fields and things, but I just like the idea of taking it places. I just like the sorts of things that happen when old car types get together, and it would be good to have an old car, and I haven't had one for a while.
Hmm. What's the last old car you had?
Oh crikey. Model T Speedster.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, that was an old car.
That was, 1920 or something. I've forgotten.
Yeah.
There'd be a few. Lotuses, various Lotus. Lotus 6, Lotus 9.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Am I right in thinking that the body's aluminium, isn't it? But the chassis underneath and the outriggers and stuff are steel.
Yeah.
That can be a problem in UK cars, because you can see one that's rescued from a driveway or a field or a barn, and you think, oh, that looks all right. And then somebody has a look actually underneath it, and there's very little.
There's not much there.
Yeah,
the floors and all that. I think they, and it's just expensive to dismantle it all.
Mm.
So I think you'd have to have a bit of respect for the condition of this thing and not just put it at risk. But the appeal seems to be that you can drive it normally.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go and establish this fact to Sabo.
And if you have had enough of it in a couple of years' time, you would think it will be worth what, at least what you paid for it.
Yeah, I think you'll get your Dosh back and maybe more.
Yeah.
So exciting.
I am excited by this. Yeah.
The question, well, I'll give you a bell, the Sabo, when
I've
had a go.
Yeah, really, yeah, that would be cool. Yes, and we look forward to answering the question, has Steve Cropley bought a car yet? Which has been running since this podcast
since
started.
Moses played fullback for Jerusalem.
You've had a stress-free charging time recently because you're driving an Audi SQ8 e-tron.
Yeah.
It's your daily at the moment.
Yeah.
You've had quite a nice, quite a decent time with it, haven't you?
Yeah, I have. It's got a big battery, 100 kilowatt plus, so it needs quite a lot of tickling. Fairly big body, heavy and all that.
Mm.
But there's a 150 kilowatt hour charger, a charging station near me, quite a relatively recent arrival.
Mm.
I just thought I would give it a go, and I drove in there, hooked it up, took a 15 seconds, I reckon. And right next door is a Costa, very nice, well-run Costa coffee place. And I suddenly struck me as I was sitting in there looking at my car, cooking away on the chargers, that this is an experience that isn't available to people who have a normal petrol car, because, you stand out there in the cold with the thing in your hand, you get rather... probably dirty. You then go and queue up behind somebody who's bought their weekly shopping and is putting it all minutely through the till. Whereas with an electric car, although it takes longer, it's actually more streamlined. And I was enjoying it. So,
and if you've got stuff to do, I mean, you and I, in our job, we quite often have homework to do, don't we?
Yeah,
basically.
Yeah.
And I've found that running, when I run an EV, I just think, oh, actually, I've got a bit of work to do then. I'll do it at that point. And it does soften the blow a bit, doesn't it? I suppose if I'm short of time, then if I just want to get home.
Yeah.
I just want to get home now. That's when it...
I think it's helpful. I'm not like you. I can't really pull out the laptop and start... if I'm 40% through a story, I can't use that time to get 50% through.
Oh, really? Okay.
But it is useful for... we get a lot of mail, don't we?
Yeah.
And I think you can go through that stuff.
Yeah, even if it's a bit of admin stuff like that, isn't it? You can get it done.
Yeah.
It's funny, isn't it? We get letters a lot. What do you reckon the split is? 50-50? People going, look, it's no bother. You've just got to think about it a bit more carefully sometimes.
Yeah, this is EV charging.
Most of the time, your life is as easy. And other people going, I can't believe you've got to spend 20 minutes waiting to top it up.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't possibly spend more than four filling up my car.
Yes.
And I kind of see both points of view, really, actually. But
yeah.
It's what surprised me when I ran a Polestar a while ago for quite a long time, is how little it usually bothered me. Because I'd always have something to do.
I remember you saying this. It didn't seem to mess up your life at all.
No, I mean, the alternative is I come home and I do the work. Or actually, I could get it done most of the time, get it done in the car if I have to charge. I mean, didn't have to charge remotely that often.
Yeah.
This, when it works perfectly, it works really well, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And it's just...
I'm interested that you would be able to... use your laptop in the car. I can't do that. I write things on telephone a lot.
Oh, really?
I used to write my Geneva show coverage on the telephone.
Can you write on a phone? Do you find it comfortable? Are you happy to write on a phone?
Yeah.
I can if I have to. If I go on a family holiday, I'll take my phone rather than my laptop.
Do you presumably write your column on
the
phone?
I can write a column
phone.
On it. Yeah, but that's 500, 600 words.
Yeah.
But I don't know, 2,000 would struggle.
Yeah.
And also there's no word count on my phone. That's the annoying thing.
No, you have to take a guess, don't you?
Yeah, you just go, well, that's about X number of lines, 8 words a line.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, we digress. What should we talk about next? Oh, yeah. So last week we talked a little about people's headlights being too bright these days.
Yeah.
Has somebody irked you in the meantime, Steve? Or is this, you've written a piece in your column in the magazine this week at the magazine shop?
Well, I was just, one of my resolutions for 2024 is is to remain calm, right?
Right.
And one of the things that it's pretty easy to get exercised about is being dazzled by people coming along. You know, we drive cars with LED headlights.
Yeah.
There are times when you're going up a slope towards somebody who's above you. These LED headlights, even if they weren't LED, they would briefly dazzle the person oncoming. Mm. They tend to give you the full benefit of whatever they've got. And, you know, people that get outraged normally have some extra lights as well. So, they want to fry your eyeballs with their
full works in retaliation.
And I have just resolved to not get involved in this and just watch The Verge, watch the centre line, watch the taillights of the car ahead and not react.
Mm.
And I'm trying to take the higher ground, as it were.
That is very noble. Is that the key? Look at the... Because I can't remember, at some point in my life, somebody has said, yeah, when you're getting dazzled by headlights, look at The Verge. And I'm not sure I'd thought about it until that
point. I think
point.
It is just not to get involved.
Something I was told. Yeah, just look away. Because if you look at The Verge, you get an idea of where you are, where you're going.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's much easier. You don't get fried headlights.
And also, in this in the era we're living in, there are often some pretty cavernous potholes in verges or near verges these days, so you're as well to look left and just see if you can get as much detail of the road that way. At least the bloke with the person with the bright oncoming lights has possibly illuminated the verge for you.
That is possible. Yeah, this is I admire your perennial optimism that life gets better. But when I think about it, 30 years ago, the lights were less likely to dazzle you. The cars were narrower.
Yeah.
And there may have been fewer potholes as well.
Yeah.
Was driving at night better?
Yeah, it's interesting.
Was it less stressful than it was?
I think it might have been.
Because it's, you've...
And also traffic levels.
And traffic were much lower, because the population was 40-odd million rather than 67 million. And not everybody drove a car.
No. Well, the thing that... I was driving around in that 77 Capri a while ago. The thing that really surprised me was that the headlights were quite good, even though they weren't even quartz halogen, I don't think. Mm. Certainly not LED, and they still illuminated the road ahead pretty well. There wasn't so much science in the way the light was directed, but somehow I found it easy to drive. It may have been narrowness, but I do wonder whether we're getting it right.
I do. I don't want to sound like an old duffer, mate, because I do. I am aware it's a possibility that as I get older, one gets a little less patient. Well, yeah, but even so, I'm not. I'm not yet.
I'll tell you when you're
I'm
old.
Not yet 50, but do you know what I mean? I'm not as patient, perhaps, as I was when I was 25.
Yeah,
I've noticed that, or I don't know. Anyway, what am I trying to say? How bright does a headlight need to be?
Yeah,
really.
Yeah.
Do we really need 2,000 LEDs to light 3 miles into the distance when you're going 50 miles an hour? Maybe that is too much. Maybe there needs to be has anybody done the actual figures who said, if you have this range of beam at this range of light, it will reduce your chances of hitting a deer or a curb or a pothole by X percent? Or actually, are we just going, well, bright is better.
Yeah.
Surely bright is better.
I suppose the big problem is that if we sort of worry away at this too much, some legislator, a bunch of Europeans are going to come around and say, you can only have headlights this bright and they can only shine this far. And if you're found to be to have something that is not the uniform European standard, you'll be thrown into prison. I just think we probably shouldn't call for too many regulations.
That's a thought. Yeah, it's an interesting thought. Steve and I are going to take a very short break. We'll be back with more My Week in Cars in just a moment.
What car would you buy if you could buy any car? What car would you buy if you knew you could save thousands? What car would you buy if you could compare the latest offers from approved dealers? What car would you buy if you could do all of this in one place in just a few simple clicks? And where would you go to buy that car? What car? Car buying made easy. Visit whatcar.com to buy your next new car.
Welcome back to the second half of My Week in Cars. Who's written to us? Philip Benson has written to us to say, enjoyed hearing about the highlight of your year, the trip to the west coast of Ireland, and I intend to follow in your footsteps this spring in my Alpine A110. And so I wrote about travelling the Wild Atlantic Way, which I did a couple of times, bits of a couple of times last year in features. Anyway, Philip wonders how long I will need to do the trip. Are you able to advise now that you've done it a couple of times? I'm happy to drive for 7 to 8 hours a day. Well, I think he's in for quite a nice time.
Yeah, sounds good. Does he need to do it all?
Well, I mean, I didn't do it all, so I don't know. And I think there are some bits of road, a bit like on the Scottish North Coast 500, there are great bits of road that are not on the official route. The Wild Atlantic Way goes from the very top to the very bottom around the west coast of Ireland. 1,500 miles, I think, in total. But I reckon there are good, really good bits of road that I found which were not part of the route or would actually shorten the route a bit.
Yeah.
But I don't know, I reckon 4 or 5 days you'd do as much great driving as you wanted, plus have quite a nice time.
Yeah. Places to stay, I presume?
Loads of places to stay. All the towns have got loads of pubs. Just, I had a great time, mate. And there's bits that I want to go back and see. Apparently there is a seaplane museum in Limerick, which I didn't have a chance to go visit.
I'd fancy that.
I don't know how big it is, how many there are, but I love the idea of a boat plane, seaplane, flying boat.
Yeah. I wonder if that was maybe there was some sort of seaplane patrol on the Atlantic or something.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, I'd like to know about that.
Yeah, so I'm going to go back at some point this year, take my bike probably, and ride a bit of it, and I'll go. I'll
Fantastic.
Report back.
Good
I'll
on
report
you.
Report back. What should we do next? Shall we talk about... Oh, let's talk about my column briefly.
Yeah.
I feel badly. So I was on a... came out of a roundabout the other day, and the car in front of me, which was a small city car, newish, pulled onto the dual carriageway off the roundabout. Reasonably quiet. No reason for it to stay in the right-hand lane, but it did. Wasn't overtaking anything. National speed limit. Yeah. Wasn't overtaking anything. There was a car under distance. Didn't look like it was making any particular effort to gain on the car in the distance. And I just get out of the way. Come on. Just get this little... Come on, Doris. Pull it left and get out the... And I just... I felt badly towards it in a way I don't think I would have done had it behaved in exactly the same way, but been a
Tesla,
Mercedes, yeah. something yeah. like that. I'd have assumed, well, in a minute, they'll get a move on.
Yeah.
And to be fair, they probably would have done. And this car did not. It just,
yeah.
But I just, I thought, I love city cars. I love small cars. I love Jeep cars. But sometimes I do, and I'm not alone because I've driven them a lot, and you and I will know, mate, because we've driven at both ends of the spectrum. You get treated very differently sometimes in a small, cheap car than you do in an expensive, posh one.
Yeah.
If you're on a motorway overtaking a line of traffic in a Kia Picanto, somebody will pull up behind you and try and bully you out the way in a way that you don't if you were driving exactly the same way in a Porsche 911.
It's just
the way it is. And I just wondered if that will stay the same as time goes on, now that we're living in the most disruptive time in the industry in the last century. Mm. Kia now sells an 80 grand SUV.
Yeah.
Hyundai now sells the best EV driver's car in the world.
In the world, yeah.
And will we start to think slightly differently about some of their products at the other end of the scale?
I think Tesla's already shown us that the... the presumptions that we used to make about badges are no more.
Mm.
And I don't think it's, although I support what you say about the, you know, everybody that reads Duster off the back of my nice little blue SUV presumes that they need to put it away, you know, yeah. no matter how you're driving it.
Mm.
I do think that we're having to be more sort of egalitarian about what we read off the back of cars.
So you drive an A110 and a Duster.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Together.
Very closely, yeah. one after the other. Do you notice a difference in the way you're driving?
Yeah, definitely. Mm. No doubt, yeah. It's funny, the A110's interesting because I don't drive it that quickly. I just enjoy the 60% sort of press. But people follow you just to find out what it is because they're still not common on the road.
Oh, interesting.
And so you see these, you know, some dad come by and a kid's hanging out of the car taking photographs and all
that. That's cool.
Which is crazy because it's a cheap car, really.
Do owners wave to each other?
No, not in my experience, maybe. I'm not a really big waver, I suppose. But I remember when it conked a fuel pump. Remember a few weeks ago, we're standing by the side of the road with this dead car, and a bloke in an Alpine came the other way, rolled down the window, and said, "Hello, fuel pump, is it?" And then drove on. So I suppose that was a form of interaction.
That's the form of it. Yeah, that's the form of it. I only own cars where that happens because there's the Defender palm up wave to each other, which I think started as a farmer's greeting to each other but has just become a Defender thing, and now farmers deliberately don't do it we've got sort of farm equipment in the back of ours. There's three bales of hay in the back of it at the moment and a load of horse feed, but still I think when I drive past a gnarled farmer, he thinks to himself, media pomps in hoodie. He doesn't think there's Ted from down the road. So I often don't get a wave back from farmers, but still. And the Beetle, of course, people wave to each other.
Oh, definitely.
Caterhams, people wave to each other.
Yeah.
And when I had one of those, and I've not come across another imp, but I imagine I would get a big, cheery, hearty.
Oh, they fall welcome. Out of the car waving.
Yeah. And of course, motorcyclists nod to
waving
each other.
Waving obviously with their driving gloves.
Yes, exactly. What should we talk next? ZapMap. Let's talk ZapMap.
Well, I got into a bit of a lather just not wishing to pick on ZapMap, but it happens that next weekend I am going to go with the missus from our place in the Cotswolds to visit some friends in Rye, 290-mile round trip.
That's Sussex, is it? Rye, is that right?
Sort of east of all that stuff along the coast.
Brighton, of course. It might be Kent, is it?
Yeah.
Sorry, Rye dwellers.
It's on the it sort of looks out on the channel and all that. And 290-mile round trip. I looked it up on ZapMap and it said, "Well, don't worry about it, mate. You don't have to recharge because
you're an SQ8 e-tron, mate, and that'll do."
That'll do a bit more than that. You'll be able to come back without a problem. And of course, the car reality is that in 4 degrees outside, as it 3 degrees as it is at the moment, does about 220. So I just wondered why these ZapMap and apps like them don't have a button that says feed in the temperature and just take an estimate of the way the range declines. Because if I follow its current advice, I will be in big trouble in about Reading on the way back.
You would, yeah. You would get a certain distance home and be...
Yeah,
it'll be out of luck, mate.
So it's just
somebody won't wind down the window and go fuel pump.
No, it's a small thing, I suppose. But given that they have so many other facilities, they can tell you the size, shape, and colour of every.
Yeah, and they are good. And they're it's a really useful tool, isn't it? I find. Yeah, as an app, it is my go-to. I suppose it's the sort of class.
Yeah,
I presume it's the class sort of
And even the industry uses it, don't they? Yeah. They say, "Well, according to ZapMap, blah blah blah." We get press releases all the time, so it just seems to be a bit of a lack. That's all. And I couldn't see why you wouldn't recognise that.
So it is 220 at the moment, ish, there or thereabouts. Is it? Is that?
I suppose it depends where you charge it. If I've got a place in London where I charge it, where the, it's down, it's an underground car park, so it's normally about, well, the coldest it gets is probably 12, 14. Right. And that then if I leave there, it's got showing 250, 260.
Okay.
My place in the Cotswolds, it'll be 225, and the official is 290 plus.
You haven't had it in the really hot
temperatures, have
you?
No,
so I suppose you know when it will.
Yeah.
Presumably it will get up there, I would have thought.
I would, yeah, I would. Yeah. I mean, it's still good enough, but you know, it's because it's got a, it's a big car and a heavy car and quite a lot of frontal area and so on. It's not as efficient as some EVs, and I find myself liking lighter cars with smaller frontal area.
Yes, same. Yeah,
just how I am.
What did I read the other day? Somebody was talking about lightweight EVs, and there is a marginal performance improvement, isn't there, if you make them lighter?
Yeah.
But you have to spend so much money to make them light that actually it's you're almost better off spending the money with a bigger battery and accepting the weight penalty, because there's so much regeneration under braking. But actually, it is not the penalty that it would be in a combustion car.
No, you can use the momentum. That's right.
Yeah, there was actually frontal area and aero that makes the big difference on EV range, isn't it? Efficiency.
I ran across somebody criticising the BMW i3 for too much use of carbon fibre because it makes it very light. The car is only 100 more than my A110, which is a light car, light conventional car. But very expensive and quite slow to build, I believe. You know, the two reasons that killed the car, I believe.
Yeah, I don't know if BMW made any money off of it, but you would.
No.
Yeah. It's a shame, isn't it? It's such a clever car.
Well, actually, and continuing, you know, lots of admiration still for what it can do. But, you know, as we've said on here before, the Honda E weighs 250 to 300 more than an i3, which is amazing to me, but probably a pragmatic decision.
We've got a note from Phil. He sent this letter in. I don't know if he wants it read out, so I'm not going to give his surname because it he works somewhere that they might not appreciate the fact that he's talking in loving terms about an i3. He says, I've had the OEM replacement Bilstein damper kit to his BMW i3, and it is transformative in terms of improvement, because the ride quality on some i3s is a bit brittle, isn't it?
It puts you off.
The ride and bump control are hugely improved, says Phil, and the comfort levels have increased significantly. There's no associated wallow or softness. Steering remains accurate and precise, and I can see no reason for anything other than praise for the setup. Are you still thinking about buying an i3, or is it still
A Range Rover?
You've got this Range Rover in your head now, haven't you?
But I still like the i3 idea, and I'm and I like the EV idea because, as I think I said before, the both of my local hill climb tracks, Shelsley Walsh and Prescott, are understood to be having race classes in normal meetings for standard EVs this year. There'll be, you know, loads of Teslas, but I think a Bilsteined i3S might be a laugh, and so that's what propels me still. And if the Range Rover project doesn't come to pass, you know, I'm still on the hook for that.
That'd be quite good.
I think it would be fun, and I reckon I'd enjoy the car, and I think I'd use it. And it behoves people in our job to, you know, if they can, maybe to own an EV. And just, I've never owned an EV, and I think I should, you know, before I'm dead.
Yeah, I mean, I will at one point, I'm sure. Yeah. I don't think it doesn't suit what I do yet, but it will do at one point.
Well, you've got a set of unusual requirements for your cars, haven't you?
I don't know whether this, because I know we've had this conversation about what you buy or not for quite some time.
Yes.
But one of the nicer parts of the process, isn't it?
It is.
You know, I could. Could
the
I
danger
do this?
Is you
Should
bore people.
This? Yeah.
But it is so enjoyable.
Mm.
And the thing is, especially if you talk about it like we're privileged to do, bits of information come up all the time. I mean, there's Phil, who writes a bit of, obviously, clever bloke, knows what he's talking about. So does this the David Power, who I was talking about earlier. And then there's another man that I've discovered called Martin Carroll, who's in who sold 500 i3s in his
oh,
career.
Really?
And he also, you accumulate the knowledge of these people, and you suddenly know everything.
Mm.
It's good fun doing the research for
yeah,
sure.
I think so. Yeah, I think so too.
So I yeah. In a way, you don't want to bring it to an end.
No, exactly. I'm in a phase with because arguably the sensible thing to do for me, because I've got this beetle Baha bug that doesn't go very far, and a Hillman imp that doesn't go very far, which I'm thinking about having a BMW bike engine conversion
yeah.
to, which would be fun. Well, I think it would be interesting. But actually, with the sensible thing, given the time I have and the kind of use I give this car, actually to chop them both in and have a bit more space outside and buy a Caterham that I would use often
yeah.
rather than something that I
Which
use
one would
very
you buy? Because they come in lots of breeds now.
They do, yeah. I'd be really torn, actually. I like the idea. I've never built my own. We did build one in the office
yeah.
a few years ago with Colin Goodwin, but I
yeah James May was involved in that.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, he was. And I like the idea of the absolute lightest variant, the sort of 440 kilo Suzuki engine.
So the 80 horsepower.
Yeah, and it's not necessarily my favourite seven to drive, but somehow the idea of that lightness appeals as
yeah.
a thing on its own, you know, as a merit on its own
yeah,
right.
Yeah, little tyres, slides everywhere.
Yeah, whereas I might prefer, I think the nicest one I ever drove was I think it's called the 135, which was 135 horsepower. Was it a Ford or Vauxhall motor? I think Ford motor.
Well, it wasn't a 1.4 K series, was it?
No, it was after that. It was. I've never driven a K series one, but I hear wonderful things about them.
Good, because they were light.
Yeah. Yeah. And but we the road testers ran one about 7 years ago,
right.
And it was just wonderful. We did a go kart versus Caterham twin test because
so
somebody
did,
said
because
yeah. there was all the cliche, oh, the go kart like handling.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, we'll take it to Rye House Kart Circuit and see if that's true. And Rye House were game. I mean, I had a great day, mate. Because you could drive pretty much every corner sideways to your, just. They don't handle like a go-kart, but no other car gets quite as close, I would say.
Mm.
You know, the fact that you can drive it around a not huge kart circuit and have a really good time, never out getting out of, barely into third gear, really.
I remember the story. I remember the project, but I can't remember the conclusion.
Yeah, it was. I mean, the only thing that handles like a go-kart is a go-kart.
Yeah.
That's the short of it, And that was my old go-kart where... I think Nick Cackett wrote that bit of the story and suggested that it's get up and go had got up and gone sometime.
Yeah, good though.
Sometime previously, yeah. And it was just, it was a cool, yeah. But I like doing distances in a Caterham, with if they've got a heater and weather equipment, and if it was new enough, it would be reliable and blah, blah, blah. But it's just all part of the, I enjoy this bit of it. Enjoy this bit of the process. Anyway, we'll find out in the coming weeks, as well as whether Steve Cropley has bought a car.
Oh, God.
So you're going to see it, this Range Rover, this afternoon?
This afternoon?
Mm-hmm.
I think I'll be allowed to have a go in it, which means that I will be able to just remember stuff like the brakes and the clutch and all the rest of it. I just remember these... I remember the gear change. There's this amazingly agricultural four-speed H-pattern with about... a foot across the between the 1.2 and the 3.4 gate. But I also remember it's got lovely pedals, big fat pedals that are made for your clogs like I've got.
Of course, yeah. Well, because they were, you might get in it with boots on and everything else back in the time.
Yeah.
Oh, of all the cars that you have thought you might purchase, this one is my favourite.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's
that.
That's a powerful argument.
One, it's exciting. Two, it's usable.
Yeah.
You know, it does something that none of your other cars do, it strikes me.
Yeah. It does. It's a car you can take places.
Mm.
It'll be interesting to see how the steering committee takes to it.
Mm.
She likes them, but she not sure that classic cars and I mix because I'm not a big spanner man.
Right.
But I think I would pay the fella anyway this time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So interesting. No, it'll be fun.
Yeah. Well, more news on that in next week's My Week in Cars, which will be with you Wednesday of next week. Until then, you can find Autocar over at autocar.co.uk, over at themagazineshop.com, where there is access to the digital archive as well. There's an Aston Martin DB12 video uploading as I speak.
Oh, what percentage now?
What percentage are we up to? Oh, it has uploaded. It is checking at the moment. It's a big file. It's about an 18 gig file or something.
Oh, okay.
So it took a while to go, but it's there. That goes live. That'll be live by the time this podcast is out. So, and that's versus the Ferrari Brougham and Maserati Gran Turismo.
That'll be a really interesting verdict, I think.
Both good cars.
Yeah.
All good cars. All three good cars, in fact.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because city car group tests, right, they all do the same thing. They're all within £5, £5 millimetres, five bits of spec of each other, aren't they? But these will do something slightly different.
Yeah.
In a good way, I think.
The thing I'm pleased to hear is that the Mazza is worthy. Because I had imagined it wasn't going to be quite there, but it has a pretty good persona of its own.
I like it, yeah. The old Gran Turismo, cool car, great noise, sensational to look at, but I liked it very much. This one is maybe less characterful, but runs on air springs, much more isolated. It just, you know, has got proper back seats. You know, if you were to choose one as a car that you used a lot, I could see the real appeal for it because, you know, it's comfortable and you could throw children in the back very easily. You know, I could sit behind my own driving position genuinely comfortably.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a 5 metre long car.
Oh, so I want to read the story. Well, I want to see the vid.
Is out now in the mag as we speak. And yes, it will be on vid too. Anyway, sorry, mate, I'm waffling. thanks for joining me. See you next week.
See ya.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.